Starting or
I don't care. Okay. Let's presume that I'm starting this thing, okay?
You know what happens when we presume?
No, that's when you assume.
Well, that as well.
Yeah, you can assume the position too.
Can you presume the position?
No, you can't presume the position.
Why not? You're not trying hard enough. Don't blind people have to presume the position?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we can arrange that.
The position or the blind person?
The blind person. Except that if I blind you, you won't be able to sit through Big Mama's house.
Who said I would be able to anyway?
You're going to give it a shot. Anyway, hi there. Happy you could stick around. I'm Ken Hanke, the movie critic for the Mountain Express. And?
Justin Souther, film critic for the Mountain Express.
Yeah, that makes both of us, see. And put together, we are Elitist Bastards, and we are coming to you from the bar of the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville, which is on
Hendersonville Road.
Yes. And we have, as in weeks past, been to the movies, and, well, in some cases it was a frightening thing, but we're going to tell you about it anyway. And who would like to start?
Don't I usually?
You want me to start? I'll start. You can start, or you can start with you can start with the Heagle.
The Beagle.
The Heagle.
The Eagle.
You say it your way. I'll say it mine.
Well, the Eagle is Channing Tatum and his giant neck. Is an ancient Roman combined? They're an ancient Roman.
I mean, he looks like Heath Shuler.
Yes.
Giant neck. So.
Less forehead.
Oh, okay. So. Well, it doesn't need much forehead, I'm sure. Anyway, let's hear about this excitement.
Well, it's directed by Kevin McDonald, who's made a bunch of documentaries and a couple of pretty good films. With
Last
the State
of Scotland,
Play,
yeah.
Last Game of Scotland. Play, yeah. This...
It's not among those?
No.
Yeah.
It's well made on occasion. He has no clue how to direct an action scene, which I don't see why people can't figure that out.
I can't see why anybody would have thought he would know how to direct an action scene.
I would have liked him to have tried instead of just... The Audrey Hepburn cam.
What?
Just shaking.
That's a Katharine Hepburn cam, not an Audrey Hepburn cam. Good. If you're going to make really bad handicap jokes, at least know who you're making fun of.
It's one of them. I doubt they're listening.
That's probably true. I think they're both retired. Or this could be going out into the, it could be going out into the ether for all you know.
Right. We got to get listeners somehow, Ken.
That's true.
It's controversial to old women.
Dead women.
Yeah. Anyway.
This could go places it's not going to. Anyway, let's hear some more about the Heagle.
It's... Name of this fucking thing. There's nothing to it. It's Channing Tatum and that
it's an
kid
ancient
from
Roman in Britain.
Yes.
Now in itself,
and that kid from Billy Elliot go looking for a golden eagle. Everything is brown and muddy and rainy. You can't tell when anybody's fighting anybody else. Mark Strong shows up in a bad Nicolas Cage wig, and it's basically just stupid.
All right, well...
How's that?
That suits me, and I don't think I'm going.
I didn't think you were.
No, I wasn't really planning on it to begin with.
Channing Tatum is not a convincing Roman. So it's all this stuff about honor. The whole movie's just... You know, like in Batman Begins, where they talk about fear constantly, it's the same thing, but with honor.
Oh, okay.
Get a thesaurus, please.
I'm not convinced to see it in any case. I didn't think you were recommending it either.
I don't know what would lead you to believe that, Ken.
Everything you said about it, I don't know. I would have to say not recommending it. And let's see. Well, what did I see?
I don't know.
Well, I saw Romeo and Juliet.
How was that?
Pretty grim.
I see.
I mean, let's face it. It's Romeo and Juliet with a happy ending and yard ornaments.
What kind of happy ending?
They don't die.
Oh. So he wasn't getting a massage. So it...
You know, what more do you want?
I don't know. Okay, good.
What?
Ken doesn't know the lingo.
No, I don't.
Okay.
This might be a historical moment.
I know.
Right here. This is the first.
But
time
if you use a piece of slang I didn't get,
yeah. You don't know what a happy ending is.
No.
If you get a massage.
Oh no!
And they give you a happy ending.
Wow.
You have a greater familiarity with massages than I do.
Everybody knows that.
No, well, apparently not.
I've never had a massage.
That's what you say, but you know this. Yeah, well, Romeo and Juliet, which is pretty grim. This is one of those classics where there's not much to say. It's a bunch of bad puns. It took 7 people to put these things together. It's got a bunch of Elton John, who executive produced the thing.
Good for him.
Songs slapped on it. As I said in the review, I did not need to hear Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting with people singing Romeo, Romeo, Romeo instead of Saturday, Saturday, Saturday. Really, this was not on the list of things I needed. This thing should not have been G-rated. It should have at least been PG-rated so they could say Payback's a bitch, which would have been a nice lead into The Bitch's Back, which we only get to hear in an orchestral version. There are also some really interesting, menacing versions of Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting as background music. It's been turned into suspense-sounding music. It works about as well as you would think. And the whole thing ends with a big production number, which looks really cheap, which is really hard to imagine. Why would something that was made, you know, on a computer need to look cheap? But it's a big production number to the Crocodile Rock, which looks like, oh, wow, let's see, Shrek ended with a musical production number, so maybe we should too. It's pretty pathetic. Just go with it, yes. Just go with it and keep right on going. Get it the hell away from me.
I saw the part where he has a giant fake nose. Is it?
Hey.
That was a giant fake nose.
Yeah, I know. It's painfully looking big nose. I mean,
I guess that's funny, right?
No, I don't think so. It looked like he was eating a potato and it got out of hand.
Does Rob Schneider show up?
No, he does not show up.
Let's get half a star.
Nick Swardson is close enough to, you know, Nick Swardson is bad. Nicole Kidman shows up and makes a fool out of herself by trying to make something out of a role that isn't there. The best thing in this stupid movie is Jennifer Aniston.
Well.
Yeah. When I come out of a movie saying, I kind of like Jennifer Aniston in there, you know how bad the rest of this movie has to be. Because Jennifer Aniston, you know, this woman could suck the charisma out of Cary Grant. And probably wishes she had.
What about a golf ball through a garden hose?
Well, we don't know about that. It's another story altogether.
Brad Pitt would still be married to her, probably.
Probably.
So what's the premise of Just Go With It?
Who cares? Oh, the premise of Just Go With It. Oh, you want to know the premise of Just Go With It?
People listening.
Well, no, they don't want to know. Since you asked me so nicely to provide a plot, here's the plot. Mm-hmm. Makes no sense whatever. When Adam Sandler is jilted on his wedding day, he is in a bar. And when he talks to this woman next to him, he happens to be with the wedding ring. And instead of thinking that she's being hit on, she joins him in conversation. And he talks about how miserable his wife is and how she's mean to him. And he claims to have been married to her for 6 years. This is not explained why he does this. Actually, it explains that he doesn't know why he did this either. Anyhow, What this does, you see, is it turns out that this makes women sympathetic, and they will sleep with you. But because you're married, they will not expect this to go anywhere. So he has been using this as a babe magnet tool since, well, I would say for about 20 years, which is fine until he meets this woman with the improbable name of Palmer, played by a woman with the even more improbable name of Brooklyn Decker, who has impressive memories, and that's about where it ends. And so he can't really explain the wedding ring to her without proving that he is basically a pig. He tells her that he has a wife, and he's in the process of getting divorced. Naturally, she wants to meet the wife. So he cons his assistant, Jennifer Aniston, into pretending to be his wife. Now, to make matters worse, Jennifer Aniston has told him that there was this girl that she knew in school named Devlin. And she has gotten her children trained to say, instead of, I'm going to go take a crap, to say, I'm going to go take a Devlin. Well, however, this is the only name he can think of. So he says his wife's name is Devlin. Of course, we're going to meet the real Devlin in the course of the film, and confusion will result. Anyway, the whole thing is stupid. You've got Jennifer Aniston posing as Mrs. Sandler in order that this 20-something bimbette is going to think that he really had a wife, he really is getting a divorce, and he's not a pig, so that he can thereby marry her. Probably the best gag in the entire film is the fact that she's a big NSYNC fan. Probably the worst gag in the entire film is watching Dave Matthews pick up a coconut with his butt. Do you need to know any more than that?
You had me at Dave Matthews.
Who then turns into a screaming queen in the last scene with a big blue drink going hoo-hoo with all these guys.
Sounds awful.
It is awful. Company Men. Ah, yes, Company Men. Company Men was an interesting movie that I suspect was well-intended. I, however, am hard-pressed to be well in... See, I just don't get a lot of boo-hoo-hooing. You know, I live, like, at the poverty line or below. So when you tell me that some three, you know, some six-figure guy in a high-up corporate position got made redundant, my immediate concern for him is not great. And when you try and make me feel bad for him as he stands there and gets misty-eyed watching somebody drive off in the Porsche he had to sell. No. No. And that's what this movie does. Relentlessly. I suspect it is, like I said, well-intended. I do not believe that anybody involved understands that the film is somewhere in between insulting and unintentionally funny. I think they thought they were doing something good and making a trenchant comment on today's financial situation. But really, it's not aimed at real people. I am sure that the people involved in this are all very cozy in their upscale Hollywood cocoon and have no idea that the rest of the world does not live like this, with Porsches and in homes that look like they were designed by someone getting ready to photograph them for Architectural Digest. No. No.
Ben Affleck does. He makes all those movies about poor Boston people.
Yeah, but he doesn't think they're real.
Of course he does. He knows a few of them.
In any case, no, I found the film really pretty offensive. And I'm sure that there will be all sorts of people saying that I have problems with class. And, fuck them.
Just tell them you have no class.
I have no class. That moves us along to... Well, let's do Barney's version. Barney's version is a really good character study with Paul Giamatti at the center of it. It's a story of... It's a flashback story told by a man whose memory is unreliable, which we find out late in the film that he has Alzheimer's, but he's probably pretty unreliable anyway. And it essentially is a life story of a man that there is no reason to like, that you end up liking anyway, to the degree that you don't even seriously question why three attractive women would, at some point in the narrative, marry Paul Giamatti. And that's a pretty good accomplishment right there. It's not one of the most riveting things you'll ever see, and the script could have been better, but really, it's a good movie. You know, it's a good movie built around a great performance, is what I would say. Supporting cast is fine. Rosamund Pike is excellent. Rosamund Pike is always excellent. One day this woman might actually be a real star. Minnie Driver is amusingly horrible. And Dustin Hoffman has only a few scenes as his father, but he's very good in those few scenes. So, you know, it's the only thing that's opening this weekend that I can even imagine wanting to go see. So bear that in mind. And then, of course, there is The Illusionist, which is at least real darn close to being a masterpiece. It is also a very sad movie. It may be the saddest movie I said originally that it was the saddest movie I've ever seen, and it's probably not true, but it is really in the running. It's an end of an era thing, and I have this theory that you've got a leg up when you have an end of an era thing. I honestly think if you worked it right, you could make Nero's Rome sympathetic. You might even be able to make the last days of the Third Reich sympathetic. I'd like to see somebody try it. It's just simply because of that end of a passing of an age thing just has some sort of immediate resonance. And in this case, the age is the age of the music hall. And it's an animated film, if you didn't know. It's made by Sylvain Chomet, who made The Triplets of Belleville. And it's based on an unproduced script by Jacques Tati. And the film looks like an animated watercolor of a world that doesn't even really fully exist when the action takes place. It's about a magician, stage illusionist, French stage illusionist, named Tatischeff, which, by the way, is Tati's real name, who, as his prospects dry up in Paris, he decides to pack up his rather aggressively unpleasant rabbit and try his luck at the music halls in London. And of course things go no better there, because it's just not the time for, you know, simple stage tricks is not what was going on. So he is playing a garden party, and a really drunk Scotsman, who you can tell he's a Scotsman because you can't understand anything he says, gives him his business card, apparently inviting him to come up north and play there. And he does play to some success in a dinky little pub. And then at the dinky little pub, he meets this girl who actually seems to think he is magic. And she takes up with him, and the two of them set out for Edinburgh, where they get a room or rooms at a rundown boarding house for music hall performers. It's run by a couple of midgets. It has acrobats coming down the stairs. It has an alcoholic ventriloquist living there and a literally suicidal clown. And this pretty much sets the stage for how this is just going to spiral. And I won't tell you how it gets at the end, but it's, there are two things, one involving the rabbit, which no, does not involve mayhem, and one involving something that the note that the illusionist leaves, that are among the saddest things I have ever encountered. But I don't think you can fault the film for being sad, because that's what it's about. It's about outliving your purpose and outliving your, you know, the people that really care anything about you or what you're doing. And I think it really is a great film. Unfortunately, here anyway, it underperformed opening weekend, and it's been cut to merely two shows a day, which means that it probably will only last one more week. So if you're local and you're listening, you need to make haste to see this film. It's time for Leave It to Bieber.
Okay.
Let's hear about Justin Bieber Never Say Bieber.
Well, it's the latest in these 3D tween idol 3D films they keep fobbing off on parents with little girls.
This is true. It however, does not appear that it had quite the immense draw of Hannah Montana / Miley Cyrus / whatever that thing, that awkward 9-mile long title.
Right.
But it
Best
appears
of both
to
worlds.
Have. But it appears to have done considerably better than the Jonas Brothers Jizz on the Audience tour, or whatever
right.
it was called. So, what can one say about this film?
Well, he's no Miley Cyrus, which is in his favor. Who she actually makes an appearance in is quite frightening.
In what way?
In 10 years, she's going to look like Skeletor, I think is what is going to happen. Some sort of walking skeleton-like creature.
What does she look like now, Amy Winehouse?
No, she's like a white trash Nicole Kidman. But more grotesque. Like the way they dress her now, she's very like adult-like. She's in a mini skirt and knee-high boots and sort of plots her way out there. And she comes out in marbles for a little bit and makes children cry.
Does she frighten horses?
If there were any there.
Ah, well, okay. And what about
the Beeb Man himself?
Yeah, how about the Beeb Man? The Beeb Man.
Well, he's the whole movie. The whole idea is to make him seem relatable and tell his story.
Yeah, you know, that stupid trailer that tries to convince me that he's just like me, even though he's got millions of dollars and is living this amazing life.
Right. Well, I mean, the whole thing is
which
obviously
is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, but it's more like I think they accidentally make him sympathetic, just because there's this whole sequence where his vocal cords are all screwed up. He's got a throat infection. And there's all these adults there.
You know, I'd have been really happy to see Split Beaver.
You don't say that often, do you?
Yeah, I know. It would have been
rarity.
Fine with me, you know.
But there's all these adults talking about how difficult it is for a 16-year-old to go on performing 86 shows in a year. But nobody seems to be concerned that he's a 16-year-old performing
86 shows. 80,
yeah, so there's this weird undercurrent of probably being taken advantage of.
That's probably true. I was wondering, does anybody, you know, question how hard it is on a street boy to turn 86 tricks in a week?
No.
I didn't think so.
Well, not all in a week, Ken.
Well,
they spread that Bieber out.
Yes, I'm sure they do. And with this spread Bieber.
Yes.
How does this compare with three Jonas Brothers?
Well, there's none of that weird, like, Christian undertones to it. Like, they want him to be wholesome, but not. They don't act like he's not what these girls want out of him.
He doesn't have a purity ring?
No.
Yeah, I don't think he has to worry anyway.
I don't know. I saw where all these girls on the Twitter got mad that he was dating Selena Gomez. One of them had the brilliant idea of calling her Selena Gomez.
Wow!
She can't wait for a movie with her in it. You can use that. I'm going to start a band called that.
Is that as much as we're going to do to the Bieber?
Are you through with the Bieber?
Yeah.
Can you get enough of the Bieber?
I think I've had enough of the Bieber. You know.
Sure.
See, I don't think you were hard enough on the Bieber. But.
You got to be gentle with the Bieber sometimes.
Yeah, that's your story, and you're stuck with it. All right.
Thursday Horror Picture Show.
What is the Thursday Horror Picture Show this week?
I don't know.
Why not?
I stopped paying attention.
Don't pay any attention. Anyway, it is a double feature.
Where is it at, Ken?
Where is it at? You're not supposed to end a sentence with a preposition. Don't you know nothing? Go ahead. Where is it at?
No. You're going to berate me. I'm just going to not.
No. Talk. Where is it at?
I don't know.
Tell us where it's at.
No.
Come on. You know where it's at.
I do know where it's at.
So where is it? Well, tell us.
No.
Would you slap him?
He's too far away. Plus, I'm going to
lean in.
Hit him.
You hit me and I'll hit.
You have Three Stooges routine.
And I'll hit Justin. All right.
It's at the Carolina Asheville in the Cinema Lounge at 8 o'clock.
When?
On Thursday, because it's in why would we have it on another day?
Well, I don't
Thursday
know.
Thursday Horror Picture Show.
But what,
people would get confused if it was on
what
Wednesday.
What date is that? It's the 17th. Never mind.
The 17th.
Yeah, there you go.
The day after this is on.
That's true.
The internet.
That's right. We hope. Yeah. Okay, and what is this double feature of? Well, since you aren't going to tell us that, because you don't know, apparently, it is a double bill, or a double feature. Two shows for the price of one, which is really cheap. When you multiply zero times two, you still get zero. And it is the 1940 B-picture extravaganza, The Mummy's Hand, followed by its sequel, The Mummy's Tomb, which you can miss the first 10 or 11 minutes of the sequel because the sequel is basically a digest version of the film you just saw.
What does the mummy do with his hand?
Oh, I can't tell you that.
The mummy's fez.
The mummy's fez? No, and no. George Zucco has a fez, but the mummy
no
doesn't.
No mummy fez.
The mummy does not have a fez. I had a fez once. Anyway, these aren't great films. They're fun films. It's, you know, they're Karras the Mummy pictures. You know, Karras, you know, moves badly and dresses badly. He doesn't dress at all. Actually, just wrapped up in gauze. And lurches very slowly so that his victims have to either freeze in stark terror or back themselves into a corner, which they're very accommodating about doing. But, you know, they're fun for what they are, and they really, despite the fact that they are so vastly inferior to the 1932 mummy, they're really still what people think of when they think of a mummy picture, is they think of these bandaged guys with one leg trailing, going around strangling people who can't move very fast. In other words, I'd be dead.
They don't think of, you know, Brendan Fraser?
I don't think so. I don't think you really think of those as mummy movies. I think we think of those as movies with the word... They're adventure movies with the word mummy in the title.
Well, you want to split hairs.
Actually, the first mummy movie and the Brendan Fraser ones, if you want to really take it apart, is more like a Sax Rohmer Tales of Secret Egypt story combined with the 1932 mummy, which it actually has elements of. So there.
I've been put in my place.
You have. It's the Asheville Film Society, and we are showing...
The Hours.
Where?
The Cinema Lounge.
Where?
At the Carolina Asheville.
Aha.
8 o'clock on Tuesdays. The...
22nd. Yes, there you go. And it's Stephen Daldry's The Hours with Nicole Kidman and Julianne Moore and Meryl Streep and Ed Harris. And it's really a phenomenal film. And you know, it was up for an Oscar, which rather ridiculously, instead of giving it to it, they gave the Oscar to, of all things, Chicago. A film which I thought was okay when I saw it, and which I have liked less with each passing year. It opens fine, and then after about 30 minutes, I've had more than enough of Chicago. Anyway, in the same period of time, I have seen The Hours a number of times, and it only gets better. It's one of the most flawless adaptations of a novel that I know. It is very close to being the novel without being just like trying to copy every comma. So, I mean, it's an excellent film, and if you've never seen it, you really should come see it because, you know, this is a chance to see it larger than usual and with an audience, and movies are always better with audiences. It's three stories that interconnect around, they're all built around Virginia Woolf killing herself. That and the fake nose and the fact that people thought that she got robbed from Moulin Rouge got Nicole Kidman an Oscar. The fake nose probably is what really done it, though. So, what's coming up this week?
Well, Barney's Virgin is opening.
Barney's Virgin is opening.
There is...
The rest of this you should pay no attention to. There
I
is...
I am number four.
I am number four. A stirring saga about X-Men children and anything, everything but name. Starring a guy that you've probably seen for far too long in a trailer for a movie called Beastly, which has been being pushed back for... Oh, goodness, I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of a year and a half. It seems that long. Anyway, and it's...
I know you can't wait for it.
They're saying that it's actually going to come out next month. I'll believe it when I see it. His name is Alex Pettifer. And he was in a movie called Somebody or Other Storm Rider, which, if I recall correctly, got such a limited release it never played here. So, he's not exactly what you'd call a household name. It also stars some TV actresses and Timothy Oliphant. It looks pretty grim to me, even if the lead character does have flashlights in the palms of his hands, which I will have to admit is probably useful.
Never lose your keys again at night.
Imagine, yeah.
Go blind looking at those.
That's true, though, yeah. It could be a problem, yeah. That also would be a dead tip off to what's going on in your room. Yeah, just think about that.
Mom, I'm just reading.
Yeah, right. No, you're not. I can tell. So, you know. And what else is opening there is also...
Big Mamas.
Big Mamas. Big Mamas. Which is not Big Mamas anything. It's Big Mamas plural with a colon after it.
Two mamas.
That's right, because this time we have two mamas. It's like father and like son, which is in point of fact actually like stepson, but... That's too long for the marquee, so they settled on Big Mamas like father, comma like son. Which
are means are they saying that dressing up in drag is genetic?
Yes, 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 they are. Dressing up in fat suits and drag is definitely genetic.
Okay.
And the whole thing is obvious that, you know, Martin Lawrence is getting his tired because it's been 6 years or something, it's been 5 or 6 years since the last one of these things. And, you know, he's obviously tired of Tyler Perry getting all the drag money, so he decided that he's going to dress up in the fat suit
first.
Once again. Yes, he was for, well, probably not, but he was first in the movies.
What else is he going to pay Martin Lawrence to do?
You know, and so, you know, he's going to do it again, and he and Brandon T. Jackson are going to go undercover at a girl's school to solve a murder in fat suit drag, you know. I'm pretty sure that Abbott and Costello did this in Hold That Co-Ed in 1945. Or Hold That Something. It was, anyway, they did something. Hold That Co-Ed seems to me like that's another movie. Maybe
there's
Here Comes the Co-Ed.
Hold That Co-Ed.
Hold That Co-Ed is a 1938 film with Joan Davis and John Barrymore. And unfortunately George Murphy, otherwise I might kind of like it. But anyway, that's Fat Suit Martin Lawrence. And then there is Unknown, yet another of those peculiar ideas that Liam Neeson is an action star.
Only in Europe, though.
Yeah, well. And in fact, this one takes place in Europe, I do believe.
So I said only in Europe.
Yes, well, you know. Europeans are less choosy. They maybe have also seen that film where Liam Neeson appears full frontal and are impressed. Because it's definitely...
Chronicles of Narnia?
Yes. Yes.
That's a lion, Ken. That was CGI. Full frontal CGI.
Full frontal CGI lion, yes.
Do we have any more to say about this stuff?
No.
All right, let's call it.
What are we going to call it?
It's dead.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've killed it for this week. So that means that...
we'll be back next week.
Yeah, it does mean that. It also means that I'm still Ken Hankey, and you're
Justin
still
Souther.
Justin Souther.
We're both from Mount Express.
Who are the fine folks, loosely speaking, who make this possible, as does our magnificent, wonderful, brave, Coherer,
Miami Steve,
Shanafelt, who I would call Simon Legree Shanafelt now that he's also our editor, but Simon he doesn't LeBon know who Bon. That is. Yes, he thinks that's Simon LeBon Bon. He thinks he's Duran Duraning, and which is in itself somewhat sad. In any case, that is it for us. I've had enough. I hope you've had enough. You probably had too much. Yeah, I've had too much too, actually.